96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. You are renting an apartment in the District of Columbia, and you have an issue with the landlord. Where do you go for legal information? Hey, maybe you're the landlord. Maybe you're dealing with a difficult tenant. What are your legal options? Well, tonight we're going to try and untangle the complexities of renting in D.C. My guests are Johanna Shreve. She is the executive director of the D.C. Office of the Tenant Advocate, and Ronald Clarkson, program director of D.C. Housing Counseling Services Incorporated. If you are a renter, if you're having issues with the apartment that you're renting or the home that you're renting in the District of Columbia, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Certainly, you can follow us on Twitter using the hashtag WHURFM. Johanna, Ron, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Johanna, let me start with you. Obviously, Washington, D.C. is the most expensive place in the nation to rent. But does that equate with rental problems? D.C., if I'm stating this correctly, has some pretty strong rental laws that help protect tenants. Isn't that correct?
That's absolutely true, Harold. I mean, but one thing let me say about D.C., it's also the only place in the United States that has a government office that focuses specifically on the rights of tenants. It's also the only city in the United States that provides emergency housing assistance for tenants in this country. So D.C. has become the progressive go-to for many jurisdictions throughout the United States. And in fact, most recently, we saw Montgomery County just pass some laws that would provide them with some of the tools that we have already developed in this city.
So talk to me about those tools specifically when you're talking about what tenants need to do to know their rights to protect themselves when there is an issue with a landlord.
Well, the first thing that they need to do, and specifically most tenants don't do, is to read the lease. The lease is the guiding provenance through which you can determine what your rights really are in some respects. However, we have developed and passed into law the D.C. Tenant Bill of Rights, which specifically provides the tenants with a roadmap guaranteeing that they understand their rights. And now that the law is enacted, it requires all landlords throughout the District of Columbia to provide a copy of the Tenant Bill of Rights when an individual applies for an apartment. Mm-hmm. Not after they get it, but when they apply for an apartment. So on the beginning of the process, they have a tool that they can use. And even if they're an existing renter, they can obtain a copy of these rights from their landlord. We were very, very much challenged by then Councilmember Bowser, now Mayor Muriel Bowser, to develop this law.
Why?
She felt that tenants should be given an opportunity to know what their rights were when they started to rent, not after they got there, but when they started to rent. And so based upon that request from her, we created this particular set of tools for the tenants to know their rights.
Ron, talk to me a little bit about what your office does as it relates to tenants and renting in the district.
Well, thank you very much, Harold.
Sure.
We have a group of folks in our office, a team that we call our tenant services section. And they are very active every evening going out to apartment buildings throughout the city, talking with tenants about the various issues that they may have, whether it's just how to manage their tenant association or if they're actually having some challenges with the landlord. And so they work with these tenants and trying to share information with them that will direct them to either the appropriate agency or person to try to address whatever the issues are, and also to inform them about their rights in various situations, and how to work through the city system to be safe renters in the city and maintain their homes affordably.
What don't renters know, based on your interaction with them, with the team going out? What is the thing that has surprised you the most about what they don't know?
Many just don't know they have rights. Plain and simple. And so those are probably more of the long-term renters that don't know their rights and don't know that they have them, that we do have strong rights here in the city. The newer tenants do know that because they do have access to the Tenant Bill of Rights they were given when they leased up, as has been previously mentioned. But yeah, existing tenants oftentimes don't know. Maybe they've been in their units for a long time and forgot that they were given this document. And so we try to remind them, educate them that they do have these rights, and that if they're running into situations, there are resources to help them.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about renters' rights here in the District of Columbia. If you have a question or a comment, if you have an issue that you're dealing with regarding renting in the district, give us a call. Lines are open. Johanna, as you are, you know, well aware, D.C. is changing. The population is changing. The demographics are changing. And with that, often there are concerns about discrimination and the like. I remember, as we say, back in the day, governmental agencies used to send out testers to find out whether or not they were being discriminated against for based on race, based on gender, sexual preference, as well as handicapped issues. How do you know whether or not you're being discriminated against? And is the D.C. government still doing anything like that?
Absolutely. There's the Office on Human Rights, who specifically are charged with the responsibility of ensuring that all federal laws that have been passed are adhered to across the city. On many occasions, we will receive questions from tenants about accommodations, particularly those who are elderly tenants who may have found themselves in a position where they've moved from inactive to now. They may have a cane or whatnot. They will write us and ask us, what should an apartment do about an accommodations issue? The protocol is to send them to the Office of Human Rights, who has the direct responsibility to investigate an accommodation or a discrimination charge. There's also the Equal Rights Center, who are very, very active in the testing. They do the testing. They go out to find where discrimination may be occurring across the city, because the multiple octopus arms of housing are such that you need partners to assist you in undertaking the types of rigor that you need to assure that people's rights are not being taken advantage of.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Viviana, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. My name is Viviana, and I'm calling. I'm a Ward 4 resident, and I just happen to be listening to the program. I actually, in the year and a half that I've lived in Ward 4, have visited the Office of Tenant Advocate, and my personal experience has been that they were not helpful. And I'm not saying that because they're nasty people or in general, but because what their structure is that if they don't deal with case by case, like independent or individuals, renters, they actually only help a tenant if the whole building is going to do something about a case, which is almost impossible for that to happen. So I found that office to be very not helpful. I also spoke to trainer there. I think his name is Sean Trainer. And he was always very condescending to me. And I have actually called the mayor's office, and I was also not able to get anywhere with that.
Let me ask you, Viviana, what was the problem?
So I'm without getting too much into personal details, I had an issue where a reasonable accommodation should have been offered, and landlords are, or this particular landlord, Colorado Associates, they trade under Colorado Associates, I believe, they refuse to honor reasonable accommodations. They just refuse to do it. And if a tenant has a disability or a tenant has a health condition, they just refuse to honor that. They didn't even inform me as a tenant that I had the right.
Let me see if Johanna can first address your issue, and I'll also ask Ron his thoughts about that. Johanna, your thoughts about her dealing with your office, first of all, and what she's claiming.
Well, I apologize if you feel that the office does not help tenants. We help tenants every day. In the case of an accommodation, as I indicated before you came online, if there is an accommodation issue, if Mr. Traynor had not directed you to file a complaint with the Office of Human Rights, then he was in error of not doing that. Accommodations are a specific type of complaint and allegation that needs to be investigated by the appropriate district government agency and the Office of Human Rights. Did you call them?
So my experience with the Office of Tenant Advocate, whatever, they gave me the runaround. I'm very diligent, and I emailed and called.
But I think what Viviana is asking.
But the question I'm asking you.
Did you call the Office
of Human Rights?
How would I know to do that?
So
we did not give you that instruction properly. Let me say, going forward, to any other tenant who may come on the call, if you find that you've had a problem with anyone on my staff, let me assure you, I'm the one that you send an email to. You can send me an email at johanna.shreve@dc.gov anytime. I am the last stop. I am the buck. And I take great pride in saying that for 10 years we have served the needs of tenants in the District of Columbia. So if you felt that you had not been served properly and have not been served properly, I highly recommend that in the future you or any other tenant.
I email you?
Exactly. Because if I had known this, I would have.
Viviana, hold on, because I've got a lot of folks on the line. And I think that
if your problem hasn't been resolved.
Yeah, you want to go. You want to go to the executive director of the office to see if that particular issue can be handled. But the other issue also, when you talk about reasonable accommodations, Ron, how would you define reasonable accommodations? It seems kind of broad.
Well, I'm not going to try to define that here, but what I will say is the correct agency to go to is the Office of Human Rights. Mm-hmm. They would be the ones to address that particular situation. And so it would be good if she can contact them. I know it's ohr.dc.gov. Reach out to them, explain your situation to them, and they will give you the appropriate information.
Okay, Viviana, thank you so much. And certainly I hope that both of those situations can be resolved. And it's good that the director was here to at least begin to address your issue. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Michelle, calling from D.C., what's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a landlord.
Okay.
And I'm renting to a Section 8 renter, and she's been there for years. And my question is, after about 1 month, well, if she doesn't pay her rent for 1 month, now what's my course of action?
You said 1 month?
1 month.
Okay.
And she's on a month-to-month lease at this point.
Okay.
If she has not paid her rent, you have the avenue of the landlord-tenant court. You also should notify, is she a Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Section 8 tenant?
Yes.
Then you should notify the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher office, because tenants failing to pay their rent under that program can be terminated from the program. It's a violation of federal law for them to violate any of the terms and conditions. So I would recommend that you immediately call the Office of Section 8, the Housing Choice Voucher Office, and speak with them about this particular violation.
Okay. Michelle.
What's my timeline for eviction, or is there a timeline at this point?
Well, ma'am, the landlord-tenant court is pretty clear. Anyone who does not pay their rent after the grace period should be notified that you intend to move towards eviction. You will provide them with the appropriate notice. You will file with the D.C. Superior Court. and then the process begins.
What is a grace period? How much time are we talking about?
Well, in the Section 8 program, the grace period is normally 5 days after the first of the month. It could be 14. I would have to see the contract that both the tenant and the landlord had signed. But there is usually a grace period, and I believe you're talking about here today is the 20th of the month, and you still haven't gotten that rent. Is that correct?
Exactly. And this is like the first time, but I just want to know my rights as
a
landlord.
Have you talked to the tenant?
Yes, and, you know, we've been promised the rent this coming Friday, but, you know, after Friday, you know, the next month is right around the corner.
Understandably, you do have legal provisions that will assist you in that effort.
Michelle, thank you so much for your phone call.
Thank you.
Sure thing.
Have a good day.
I need to take a break. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about renting and your rights in the District of Columbia. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds. Stay with us. I'm Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about renters' rights in the District of Columbia. My guests are Johanna Shreve, Executive Director of the D.C. Office of the Tenant Advocate, and Ronald Clarkson, Program Director of D.C. Housing Counseling Service Incorporated. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to DeLon calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, DeLon. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? One of the questions I wanted to know was, how do you deal with getting someone out to examine your home so that when you do go to court, you can show your findings? One of the things I'm dealing with is I've been withholding the rent, and then I'll pay every time I go to court to show her, hey, I need you to come out to fix what needs to be done. And every time she delays, I wait to go to court, I pay, and then I'm trying to get resolution in the court. I found out that I had to file an action towards her in order to even speak about my issues in court. And one of the things is I have to go to court on the 29th. Who could I speak to about coming out and examining the things that I need done before I go to court?
You can go to the Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs. That is where you will find the housing inspectors. They can come out, and I would encourage you to call them in the morning if you have a 29th date in court. Are you talking about going to the Housing Conditions Calendar Court, or are you talking about going?
Landlord and tenant.
Okay, well, you have a second bite at the apple. If she fails and continues to fail to perform based upon your contract, you need to file with the Housing Conditions Calendar Court, which we were able to create sometime back in 2008, which allows the tenants to bring the landlords into court. And there's a judge there waiting to hear from tenants regarding landlord's performance. So while you may be brought into L&T because of the rent payment
L&T
issue, landlord and tenant court,
okay.
Sorry,
mm-hmm.
You should consider filing in the housing conditions calendar court with all photographs. You can take your own photographs, okay? You can take your camera and go around and do a video and take it into the court. You don't necessarily need DCRA, but I do recommend highly that you call DCRA and you schedule an inspection of your housing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Ron, you have something there called the Tenant Survival Guide. What is that? Can you give me a thumbnail sketch of what's in it?
Well, the Tenant Survival Guide is a tool that was put together to try to give tenants in the city all the information that they would possibly need in order to maintain successful tenancy. And so it helps them in understanding, one, their rights. It also helps them understanding where the resources are, so that when we're talking about things like L&T or the landlord-tenant court, you know, it gives them that information. If we're talking about DCRA, it gives them the contact information with phone numbers, those kinds of things. So it gives you all the resource information that a person needs in order to work through whatever the issues are.
Do you need an attorney if you go to landlord-tenant court? Because unless you have really deep pockets, a lot of people are struggling to just make the rent payment. And the thought of hiring legal representation to get a landlord to do what they're supposed to do, or to get a company to do what it's supposed to do regarding your rental property where you're renting would seem to be cost prohibitive. Can you do it on your own?
Certainly you can. It's called going pro se, but we recommend that you chat with us about whether or not you can appear before the court on your own or whether or not you need assistance. In the Office of the Tenant Advocate, we have attorneys who are there specifically to assist tenants. The city has also embarked upon the Right to Counsel, which is a movement across the country as well as internationally, which means that all tenants have a right to counsel so that they're not on an unlevel playing field. So it's important for tenants to contact us to find out whether or not the issue requires attorney assistance. If you go to the court, there is the Landlord Resource Center. Legal Resource Center for tenants. You can speak to a lawyer right at the court. There are the D.C. law students in court who are there because they are also young people learning to become professional attorneys, hopefully in this area. There are a number of nonprofit legal service firms, Legal Aid, AARP Legal Counsel for the Elderly, and others who definitely represent tenants in court. So, yes, there are a variety of places that are available to the tenant community in terms of getting representation.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Gloria calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Gloria. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm calling because I'm disability. I'm disabled, and I'm on an oxygen machine. And I'm supposed to be on the ground floor, which they have no apartments available or no elevator. So I need to get up out of here because when I go up the steps, I can't even breathe. 15 steps, I got to stop at least 5 before I can catch my breath. So, and they, I'm in Rich Homes, and they said, and I'm on a universal Section 8, that they cannot do anything for me or it won't follow me. And I have been down Housing Authority, which they told me I got to wait till I'm 61.
Resolution for her, what should she
have do? You been to the Office of Human Rights? Because you do have an accommodations issue.
No, I don't know nothing about the human rights or where it's located.
Do you have a pencil?
One thing I did do, I wrote John Evans, the councilman.
Jack Evans?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't gotten back no status from him.
Do you have a pencil available?
Yes, yes.
Call my office in the morning at 202-719-6560.
6560.
And ask for Dennis Taylor. He's general counsel in my organization.
And for Dennis?
Dennis Taylor.
Okay.
Dennis. When you call in the morning, you're going to speak to Jocelyn Reyes. Tell her that you talked to me tonight on WHUR.
Who did I talk to?
You're talking to Johanna Shreve.
Okay, Johanna.
Tell her you talked to me and leave your name.
I will.
So when I get in the morning, I can make sure that Dennis calls you. And then we also need to put you in touch with the department, the organization,
okay.
D.C. Human Rights Office, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're
Thank
welcome.
Thank you, Gloria. I appreciate
Bye-bye.
That. One of the things that has become a critical issue in the district is the scarcity of affordable housing. And it's my understanding, yes, that even as we have new buildings come up, there are often set-asides or for people to get into affordable housing. How is that defined, and what should someone who is applying, for affordable housing expect when they go through the process? Should it be, is it any more different than someone who does not need those specific affordable housing accommodations?
Well, I can help speak to that one. Basically, there are a few programs that have come online here in the district that have been very progressive in trying to provide some affordable housing. One that you allude to in terms of the new construction is the Inclusionary Zoning Program, as well as the Affordable Dwelling Unit Program, acronyms known as IZ or ADU. And those programs generally will require that a person, after they go through whatever the registration process may be, that they will have to eventually provide documentation of their income, as well as other documents that would support that, bank statements, all kinds of things, tax returns, what have you. So they have to be prepared to do that. But to start with the inclusionary zoning program, you have two avenues. One is a lottery system, if you will, for lack of a better term, where it's a random selection process where people register online through the District Department of Housing and Community Development. They administer the program. And you register online for that after attending an orientation session. And then your name is in the hat at that point, and you wait for an available property to come up. Now, those properties are in the new developments that are going up. They are below market rate in terms of the pricing. It's not based on income. It's not based on, you paying one third of it or anything like that. You're going to pay whatever that reduced rent is, or if you're a buyer, or whatever that reduced purchase price may be. And then you're in that affordable property for a period of time, and you have to recertify if you're a renter every year, recertify your income. Similarly, the Affordable Dwelling Unit Program does the same thing without the tool of a lottery. And so those are options that are out there, as well as there are some buildings have their own Section 8 or set-aside type units, and they have their own waiting lists that people can try to take advantage of. And so it's a matter of doing some legwork and identifying these individual buildings that have these and getting on those waiting lists. And there may be something where it's a senior building or something like that that provides some other benefits for seniors. And so they can get on a waiting list, and then when a unit becomes available, they can get fair consideration.
Anything you want to share about that, Johanna?
Not necessarily about the ADU or the IZ, because I think Ron covered that. But I as a member of the mayor's preservation strike force, we were tackling the whole issue of affordable housing in another context. And one of the recommendations that we sent forward to the mayor was the creation of a loan program for small landlords. One of the problems that small landlords has is availability of capital to upgrade their units. And thus, to keep those units in the affordable category, looking at a program where the design would be, let's say, a loan that is deferred until the time of sale so that the property could be rehabbed, brought up to today's standards, and then the loan pay at the time of sale. That keeps the rents affordable because you don't have to service the debt of a loan. Coming up with imaginative ways to bring about affordability is a complex subject, which I believe the mayor, through her commitment of $100 million to the Housing Production Trust Fund, through the advancement of home dollars through DHCD, through the use of CDBG money. Sorry, community development block grant dollars.
That alphabet soup. I was with you. And
until
then,
I said
until
that.
Until you started pouring milk on my alphabet cereal.
Well, community development block grants, which is the CDBG program.
I know who you work for.
Is another tool that the federal government has passed down to local jurisdictions. I believe that public-private partnerships between the city and folks who are really committed to the issue of affordability is a prerequisite for success in the long term. So, yes, we see all of these buildings going up, and we know that the IZ program is in play. We know that ADU units are in play, and yet and still the working class folks in D.C. are still moving to Baltimore, Virginia, and outsides because rents are really too high.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Alexandra calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I'm living at the Claremont Apartments, and I rent from Dreyfus, and they give us a 1-800 number hotline to call if we have any problems, but they never, fix any of the problems. I have mold over in my ceiling in the bathroom and around the tub, and I have reported that. I've been here since 1994,
and I'm paying $1,301 mm-hmm. every month, and, you know, not late on the rent.
So let me stop you there.
Mm-hmm.
What should she do?
Mold is an issue that we see happening across the city. And where there's mold, that means there's dampness. And where there's dampness, it means that the pipes are probably have pinhole leaks.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that you, too, call our office and let us assist you in working through that problem.
Uh-huh.
The Department of Environment here in the city, on their website, they show you a site. And it shows what the mold regulations are and the most recently passed regulations regarding this matter. But I would recommend that you call us in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Let us work with you to help you get that problem resolved.
How long, before I go to break, thank you, Alexandria.
Yeah.
How long would it take to, for example, get something like that resolved? Okay, she calls tomorrow and her claim has a basis. In fact, she's got mold and the like. How long? I mean, could it be done in a month, 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year?
Oh, I believe that the problem can be detected and a respectable solution to the problem can be done, usually probably within a couple of weeks. We don't have a problem calling landlords. Mm-hmm. We get on the phone. We don't have a problem going to the property. We don't have any problem working with DCRA to get them out to see what their source of the mold might be. Because where there is mold, there is dampness. There's no question about it. There are federal regulations that dictate what should be done. And currently, the Department of Environmental Services does have a law out that deals with the remediation side of mold. So we've been working on this problem. It's not new. It's very old. But where you have old buildings, you're going to have problems creep up on a regular basis. And usually the cause of most of that mold is pinhole leaks in the pipes.
Okay. Again, we want to thank Alexandra for her phone call. We're going to take a break. Derek from Northeast D.C., Stephen from D.C., we're going to talk to both of you after the break. Stay with us. We're talking about renting and your rights. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about renters' rights in the District of Columbia. Let me go back to the phone lines. Derek calling from Northeast D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
Doing just fine.
I'm calling to see if y'all are familiar with something called a tax credit community.
Yes.
That's where I live. And where I live at, we have Section 8 SSI, and you have people like me who work every day in the same community. I'm trying to figure out, this tax credit community, I'm confused about. Does this help me in any kind of way? I'm trying to figure out, how does it help me? Does it help me with how they can go up on my rent, or how much they can charge me on my rent?
Say the question to me again. Tax credits were done to afford a developer the ability to lower the construction cost.
Mm-hmm.
And they sell the tax credits to syndicators in order to raise equity for the property.
Now, what does that mean?
Equity is cash.
Right, but I mean syndicators. As if I'm a renter, what does that have to do with me?
It has nothing to do with you as a renter, but it was what was used in order for that particular development to be constructed. So that the rent structure is based on 60% of the AMI, that is the area median income, okay? And if you live in a property that is a mixed-income property, it probably is to your advantage because you have a blending of community types in your particular property. But you were talking about your rent increase.
Well, right now I'm paying $1,316. And
okay.
I talked to them, and they sent me the highest they can go over my rent is $1,455.
Okay.
And the last two times they went over my rent, first was $82 and then $100, which I had never seen before.
Okay. I can't answer it without looking at the specific correspondence. It would be irresponsible to try and respond to that without knowing all of the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want further assistance in ferreting that out, call us at 202-719-6560.
6560.
Yes, sir.
And I would just add that with a tax credit property, you probably start off from a base of where the unit is made quote-unquote affordable in the beginning, where you're able to get in at a lower rent than the market rate in the surrounding area. And so typically the rent is supposed to be lower than the surrounding market, but that doesn't mean it'll never go up. So mm-hmm. that's just some bit of information about the tax credit property.
Okay. Well, they were trying to charge us for water where I'm living, and we had an associate who shot that down. It seemed like as soon as that was shot down, the rent went up. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I've seen.
Why don't you give us a call?
Yeah, definitely give them a call. Give OTA a call tomorrow, Derek, and thank you so much for your phone call. Let me quickly go to Stephen. Stephen calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind, Stephen?
Yes, hi. Good afternoon or good evening. My question is involving around landlords who rent either an apartment or a unit or a bedroom or room, that there's some type of certificate that they're supposed to receive prior to renting, and it should be displayed in the apartment.
Oh, you're talking about the business license. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All individuals who rent properties are required to have a basic business license. And that license should be evidenced somewhere in the common areas of the property.
Okay.
There should also be an occupancy of the...
Is it use and occupancy? Or?
Yeah, the occupancy permit should also be evidenced in the property.
Okay. So what's the purpose of this business license as far as the tenant is concerned?
Well, the purpose of it is, one, the landlord is registering that he's in business to rent a property. Two, okay. he is supposed to register with the rental accommodations office because all units in the city are required to register with the rental accommodations office, which is a part of the Department of Housing and Community Development. Upon registration, they pay a fee. The fee right now is $43 for every 2 years. Once they fill out that form and they register with RAD, an inspection occurs. The inspector comes out to ensure that the property that you are renting is in compliance with the big basic building codes. So that's why it's important to have all of those particular documents present in the property. If the property is a rent control property, that means a property built prior to 1976. Okay? If he doesn't have a business license, he cannot raise your rent. Okay. There's a reason for you to make sure that if they don't have it, that you know about it.
So they don't. And I rent a condo, and they don't have one.
They rent a condo. Yes. Well, they need to have a basic business license.
So what should he, and if they don't, then what recourse does he have? Does that mean that he should not be renting? Is he in there illegally? Who's at fault?
He's not illegal in renting, but they're illegal in renting without the basic business license. If, in fact, the rent goes up, that's when you have a problem. Now, it appears if it's a condo and the property was built after 76, they can raise the rent. But they really are not supposed to raise the rent without a basic business license.
Okay. I'm sorry. That's a little confusing. So you said they shouldn't, but they can.
Said that they can raise the rent, but is not the rent increase can be challenged if they don't have a basic business license.
Okay, I got you now.
Okay.
So I can challenge it. So would it behoove me to say something or not say something about it?
It would behoove you to say, ask them where their basic business license is. And if they don't have one, please direct them to the Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs, or they can go to the Department of Consumer and Regulatory Affairs online. You can do this online. But once they register, it's going to trigger the other events. They have to register. And on top of that, the district isn't giving any revenue that they should be getting for the registration fee. And you have not had what you need, which is protection from an inspector to ensure that the property is in compliance with the law.
So it is a brand new property. I'm the first person to live in it. So is that maybe why they didn't do the inspection or get the license?
I can't answer that question. All I'm telling you is they are required, if they are renting the property, they have to have a basic business license and it has to be inspected.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, Stephen.
All right, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen. You mentioned something about rent control in 1976. What is rent control? We've heard that term for decades and decades as part of pop culture, as well as, you know, housing, you know, nomenclature. What is it?
It's really rent stabilization. It was a law passed many, many years ago with the intent of controlling rents. New York has it. Boston used to have it, and they repealed it. Many people poo-poo the whole notion of rent control. But rent control is meant to ensure that the rent doesn't go up but a small percentage on an annual basis, thereby ensuring that people can still afford the units. Where it becomes great is when you have mothers with children, you have seniors who have lived in properties for a very, very long time. And in the district, we do have some very, very clear rules based upon the Housing Act of 1985. So stabilizing rents is extremely important, while at the same time we fight every day the tools and the maneuvers that go on in the marketplace, which erode rent control. We have petitions in the city that allow housing providers to increase rents in very, very different ways. There's a petition for capital improvements in which if they file one, they can have tenants paying for their capital improvements on a property. There's one for services and facilities. When facilities, they want to eliminate certain facilities or services, they have to file a petition to do so. There's one called a hardship where they can file indicating that they didn't receive a 12% return on their investment. These are the kinds of things that have begun to erode away the rent control. And the most damaging of all is the voluntary agreement. And that is where a developer will go into a property that potentially may be sold. If he can get 70% of the tenants to agree to certain kinds of provisions and concessions, he can go in and get 70% to agree to allow him to raise rent on vacant units in the property, which go far beyond rent control.
So he can raise the rent on the vacant ones without raising rent on the occupied.
That
ones.
Is correct. That's the deal they sell.
Wow, amazing, amazing. What's your phone number again? Because we have Pam from D.C., but Pam, I'm out of time, and so I want to make sure that your issue can be addressed. So you may need to call the Office of Tenant Advocate. So Johanna, what's that phone number again, please?
Again, that number is 202-719-6560. We're located at the Reeves Center, which is at the corner of 14th and U Street, 14th and U, 2000 14th Street, and we're on the third floor.
Okay. And also, Ron, for D.C. Housing Counseling Service, how can people reach you?
The phone number is 202-667-7006. And we are located in Adams Morgan at the near the intersection of 17th and Calorama Roads.
Okay. And Pam, I know you're listening. I want to make sure that the information that you just heard, if you don't have it written down, it'll be on WHUR.com within the next 30 minutes on the Daily Drum page. You'll see rental laws in the district. So I want to thank both of you, Johanna Shreve and Ron Clarkson, for coming in tonight. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Thank you, Harold, very much.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, September 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
That was so...